So, President Fixon, I'm the first one to congratulate you up here. So, thank you for that nice introduction. Past President Steiner, congratulations to you on your wonderful tenure here. My good friend Sonny Ramaswamy is here, and Ellen Bergfeld, and so many here. So wonderful to be with you. ASA, located in Madison, Wisconsin. So I want to tell you a story that I just recently learned. Maybe you all know these stories, but we're always talking about, where is the Green Revolution born? You know, is it in Mexico? Is it in India? Was there? But I think the Green Revolution was born in Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah, in 1953, in Rennenbaum's drugstore. Anybody from UW, Wisconsin here? So I don't know if you're old enough to remember Rennenbaum's drugstore. That used to be near the Plant Genetics building. I lived in La Crosse and in Milwaukee, but not been to Rent. So in Rennenbaum's drugstore, 1953, Norman Borlaug and M.S. Swaminathan meet for the first time. I think Swami was doing a postdoc at Wisconsin. Borlaug's there for a conference. They're having coffee. Oh, I asked Swami, do you remember, were you at the counter? Were you at a table? Where? Oh, he couldn't remember. But that's where their connection came. And that led then to Swaminathan, looking to get Borlaug to come to India in the 1960s. So I want to put a plaque up there. You have to help me do this, because it ought to be, you know, here's one of the great moments in plant science and crop science and agriculture that took place. It's those small communications, right? Those small moments that can change the world. So anyway, I'm thrilled to be here. I want you to know I'm on a Borlaug tour, and I'm thinking about maybe organizing this after, you know, when I retire from the World Food Prize, which a long time from now. Because I started in Iowa, where Norm was born, and I walk out of our building and I go past Norm's statue out to the airport, where I flew down to College Station to go to Texas A&M, where Norm was on the faculty for 25 years or so. I know David Baltensberger from A&M is here, and my good friend Ed Runge, who's the one who recruited Norm to Texas A&M. And I had the whole experience. I went to the football game and waved the flag and gave him the Gigamaggie sign and everything. Whoop, yes, I almost did this when I went out on the field. and I said, it'd be amazing to be hissed by 100,000 people at the same time. But I came to my senses and gave him this instead. So now here I am in Minnesota, and I gave the Borlaug lecture at Texas A&M, walk into the Borlaug Institute in their building, there's a statue of Norm there. Now here in Minnesota, I have to tell you, it's a good thing that Iowa won the football game against Minnesota on Saturday night. It might have been difficult for me to show up. I might have been calling you and said, "Oh, Paul, I'm sick. I can't make," because it would be so humiliating to be here. But Norm loved the University of Minnesota and came, you know, here. He wrestled here. He learned his tenacity to carry out when all those decades in Mexico when it was so hard, learned it on the wrestling mats at the University of Minnesota. And they've got a 7-foot statue and a building named for him. And if my tour was going to continue, I'd probably want to go to Norway and to where he received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970, and where there's a beautiful exhibit about him at the Nobel Museum. And then he would get on the plane and go to Mexico, where he spent decades developing his miracle wheat, and where I was in Obregon in 2010, and they had a statue that the farmers there are erecting to Norm, and would be at then go to India and Pakistan, where he takes the Green Revolution, And there's a statue there at the Indian Council of Agricultural Science. And to Africa, I was in Uganda last year, and what Norm did there was being recognized all around. The National Ag Fair was, the theme was, his last words, take it to the farmer. And then I'm go to Washington, D.C., where his statue was unveiled on March 25th, 100th anniversary of his birth, in Statuary Hall. There he is standing next to Rosa Parks. I know my good friend Ron Phillips from the University of Minnesota, who was here, a great friend of Norm, and was there. And so it's amazing, all these statues of Norm are everywhere. And I'm so pleased to have had this opportunity to work with him. But I have to say, I didn't know, hadn't met E. Travis York, or Bam York, but I'm sure he's looking down today from ASA heaven, right? That's where, right? Or Green Revolution heaven, or agricultural heaven, and that, and saying, well, who's this guy giving my lecture? And why do we have somebody who has a PhD in political science and who probably doesn't understand in any of the science for any of you that work on here? Why am I here? Because I was born in the Bronx. I'm a city kid. I was forcibly taken to the Middle West when I was 10 years old and bounced around and ended up in Dubuque, Iowa. I was never in 4-H, I was never in FFA. Even worse, I had no interest in agriculture. I have no interest in what you do. I went to Madison, took the Foreign Service exam to become a diplomat. Somehow, you know, we all decry government inefficiencies. As a former government employee, I feel I can say, you know, I feel the pain when people think we don't do things right, and I know how wrong that is there. But every once in a while, you know, some mistake gets made in the government, and it's an okay thing. Since they probably got my scores mixed up with somebody from Harvard or Princeton and sent me the letter, so I got into the Foreign Service. And I'm driving from Dubuque to Washington. I'm going to show up, and I have these diplomatic sugar plums, visions of these dancing in my head. Oh, I'm going to be going to London. I'm going to be in Vienna. I'm going to be in chandeliered ballrooms, sipping aperitifs. And instead, they said, oh, it's 1967. The Vietnam War is on, you're under 26, you're not married, you haven't been in the military. And before I knew what happened, they were training me in Vietnamese, put me on a plane, and I land in a single-engine plane on a dirt road in the Mekong Delta of Vietnam. And they tell me, we'll be back for you in 18 months, and if you're still alive, then we've got a good assignment for you in Europe, and we're going to send you to Harvard and all these things. So I'm there, and I say, well, I just got to, you know, stay loose, and then my dreams will be fulfilled. But in between that, I ended up learning the lesson of my life that changed my life, my career, and it all had to do with agriculture and the Green Revolution and the work of Norman Borlaug, but of Hank Beachel. And so great that you have Hank honored here with a special award. Because I was a district advisor. I'm this 26-year-old kid, first time ever outside the United States, and I had 8 villages that we were working in. And by chance, not by design, we were doing 2 things. We were upgrading this rural road, old French road, that had fallen into disuse and all rutted and that. And the ag advisors were showing up with the very first IRA rice that Hank Beachel developed at Erie. So I don't know who else here was there, but I was present in the villages at the birth of the Green Revolution, when the very first plants showed up. And while I didn't grow up in your field, I at least received a good enough education at Loras College in Dubuque, and I was able to see what was happening and the transformation that took place. And we had finished this road through four villages, and wherever we finished the road, people started using the IR-8 rice. The ag advisors would be out showing them, you have to have the seeds, which of course will produce now a crop in half the time. In 3 months, you can get two crops, and you get a crop of melons, you get disposable income, but you gotta have irrigation, you gotta have fertilizer, but it worked. It transformed things overnight, literally. You could drive through there and see people now had more money, their houses were better. They had metal roofing on it. Their children were better dressed. They were better nourished. They were staying in school. Girls were staying in school longer. Child mortality went down. And the one thing that was so unexpected was that the Viet Cong guerrilla terrorist infrastructure that we couldn't get rid of with boots on the ground or bombs evaporated. The roads and the IRA accomplished what we couldn't accomplish any other way. And I saw for myself this transformative power. Of course, it should have been designed that way because it's the lesson of the United States. It's the lesson of how Wisconsin and Illinois and Ohio and Indiana and probably every state in the American heartland was transformed. It was by building farm-to-market roads and setting up land-grant universities. That's how all of the Henry Wallace's hybrid corn and all of the other innovations and things that E.T. York and others did, that's how it got to farmers. That's how we transformed our country. But it seemed we had forgotten all these lessons, and I learned it there just by seeing it. By chance, by serendipity, we're doing it at the same time. 20 years later, I went to Cambodia. I was Deputy Assistant Secretary and later Ambassador. There were 25,000 Khmer Rouge, Pol Pot, about whom I wrote my doctoral dissertation, and that. And the 200,000 North Vietnamese military personnel tried for a decade to get rid of them. There were still 25,000 Khmer Rouge there in 1990. I had $11 million of your taxpayers' money, mine too, and I used it to rent and lease road grading equipment and said, bring it in from Thailand, let's build roads out into every area where there are Khmer Rouge. And 9 months later, 9 years later, when I was leaving and finishing my career, as ambassador to Cambodia, and that the last Khmer Rouge surrendered. We had eliminated completely the worst genocidal, mass-murdering terrorist organization of the second half of the 20th century, who had caused the deaths of almost 2 million of the 7 million Cambodian people in 4 years, using Hank Beechel and Norman Borlaug's approach to agriculture. All the work that you do, that all of you do. So I retired. I was hired to come to back to Iowa, take over the World Food Prize, work with Norman Borlaug. You can imagine how suspicious he was of me, a diplomat. what are they thinking about there? And so I told him all these stories. And Norm Borlaug and I bonded over roads, because he had the same view about the critical importance of roads that I have. You might say that he and I spent a decade, we had a synergy in roads, partnering for solutions as well. Now, as part of that, and as the World Food Prize has grown and we've developed programs, I set out to have this wonderful Hall of Laureates building, and there, I hope all of you will come to Des Moines next October, 12, 14, for our Borlaug Dialogue, see the building, So I'd be out, we had to raise over $30 million to do this building. And I'd go out and I'd make pitches, you know, to raising money and saying to people, hey, you know, can you, give us some money for the building? So some of them would then go and talk to Norm. Well, Norm, I'm thinking of giving $1 million for the building. And he'd say, don't do that, you know, give the money, you know, to CIMIT or to one of my other research projects. Oh, you know, I had to keep them away from Norm. Because Norm would, you know, he was about the work. He was about what's on the ground. But I'd say to him, and I'd say to every donor, here's why it's important. Here's why doing this, here's why all those statues are important. And that it's because that Norm's not going to be with us forever. And yet we need his vision. We need his legacy to inspire us, to guide us as we face the greatest challenge in human history, feeding 9 billion people. And we need it as well to use food and agriculture to find peace. And what Norm's, his last words were, take it to the farmer. Use science to bring the green revolution to Africa and inspire the next generation. So you know, Norm was a visionary in 1986 when he created the World Food Prize, make it the Nobel Prize, and that, and it's a $250,000 prize. And while I'm here, I want to say, you know, you all should be nominating people for this. Who's doing the great breakthrough achievements? Go to worldfoodprize.org. You know, write and contact us. Contact me. Get one of our brochures, but nominate people for our prize, because it's Norm wanted to recognize and inspire those breakthrough achievements that will be needed to meet that great challenge. And our laureates come from around the world, most recently from Bangladesh. There's Sir Fazli Hassa Abed. There's President Joyce Banda, former president of Malawi, Desai, along with John Ruan, our chairman. A couple of years before that, Cynthia Rosensweig, my good friend, her colleague from Colombia, Daniel Hillel, received our award. So everybody's aware of what's the tragic things that have happened in Paris and of terrorism. So here's Daniel Hillel, an Israeli Jew, pioneer in micro-irrigation, wonderful man. Nominated for our prize and endorsed by 3 Muslim Arab scientists from 3 Arab countries. And here's Ban Ki-moon in Des Moines, Iowa, there helping present our prize to Daniel Hillel at this moment when the Israeli Defense Force and Hamas were shooting at each other in Gaza. It shows the power of what's possible, that what agriculture can do, how it can be the lead element in reaching across even the broadest gaps, whether they be ethnic, religious, political, diplomatic. And that was a great moment, wasn't it, Cynthia? And then we have our Borlaug dialogue, because Dr. Borlaug was always about ideas, and you know, Bill Gates launched his initiative for agriculture in Africa at the World Food Prize. Kofi Annan, Tony Blair's, and there we also have smallholder farmers from Africa. It's the place where everyone should come together once a year, World Food Day. We all should gather and say, how are we doing? And it's the place where the NGO leaders and government ministers and research scientists and university leaders can be and talk to each other and network. And there's a Borlaug Task Communication Award that's given there as well, and which is all about what you've been talking about here at this conference. But the other part of what we do is our youth programs, inspiring the next generation. So here's all the statues, all the buildings, all the symposia, all the Borlaug dialogue, all the laureates. The single most important, most significant monument that we can build to Norman Borlaug is inspiring the next generation of young students to follow him and follow what all of you have been doing, because if we don't do that, then there is no hope. Borlaug said his work with young people was always his favorite part of the World Food Prize and his most important legacy. So to do that, we have a youth institute. Norm started it in 1994 for high school students. Here's the first one. It was amazing. There were 13 or 14 Iowa high school kids, and Jimmy Carter, Muhammad Yunus, and Norman Borlaug, three Nobel Peace Prize laureates, and 13 high school kids, like the all-time greatest high school program. Now it's grown. We have 200 students who show up. There they are outside the Capitol where we give our prize, the Oscars for Agriculture ceremony. And I was so pleased to see so many young women being honored here today with your award, because 70% of those high school students who were there in Des Moines in October were young women, because we have to have all of our human resources. The countries that make it are going to be the ones that, yes, that educate and have women in those positions. And that, so our Global Youth Institute, these high school kids, they get to interact with laureates like Hans Herrin and Gabisa Ejeta. They get to see presidents like President Lula, meet with Ban Ki-moon. You saw Joyce Banda before. And then beyond that, now Norm's vision was, I don't want to just have a youth institute in Des Moines. I want to have one in every state. So we're building a model in Iowa, where we try to reach into every high school in the state, have them writing papers, competing to be the Borlaug Scholar, and then they show up on the campus of Iowa State University in April. We're in now about 53% of the high schools, and get them writing the paper, competing to be there, and it's the secret way that the land grants can get the best science students to show up on their campus and grab them before the other non-land grant state university, if you have one, or if you're here in Minnesota and it's all in one, you know, you can keep them from going over to liberal arts or the chemical engineering program or so. Get them in agriculture. That this is your chance. This is the device for that. And now we're building it out in 17 states, and our goal is, of course, to be in every state. That was Norm's dream. Students in every school writing. We have them write about your solution to hunger issues and how agriculture can be enhanced in a country. You pick it. Write about it. And it's amazing what happens what these students produce. And then the top 23, we pick and send them as Borlaug Ruan interns, as high school students, to international agricultural research centers around the world. So I've got kids at ILRI and ICIPE and Embrapa in Brazil and CIF in Peru. They're in Mexico. There's four different places in China, and they come back transformed and they come back motivated. On top of that, and I said to Gene Steiner before and others, we are so pleased to have this program, the Wallace Carver Fellows Program. So in addition to those 23, we've got 30 or so who spend the summer at USDA in a program that Secretary Vilsack and I created while standing on the train platform in Tokyo. So you never know when things are going to happen. On top of that, we have our George Washington Carver interns. My special assistant, Crystal Harris, who's down here, was one of those interns, and then I convinced her to stay around. And by the way, with Crystal and me here, just so you understand of the World Food Prize, 20% of the entire World Food Prize staff is in this room. So we're lean, but not mean, I hope. But not mean. And here's the results. Here's what happened. And that we've this 21 years, more than 10,000 students participated. 2/3 are young women, and out of that, 91% pursue college degrees, food, agriculture, and STEM. And 76 are employed in careers in critical food, agriculture, and STEM areas. It works. It works. Get them early. We get them started. We get them interested. We hand them off to you with your wonderful golden opportunity and Greenfield Scholars and other programs. This will make a difference. Here's our youth team there. So these are the four individuals. Keegan Kautsky on the left is going to be up here later today and will be around at the conference. We've been recognized and received awards and recognition for our youth program. And we are so pleased because what we do is we reach into schools, and particularly city schools, inner city schools, suburban schools, where students don't have any thought, any inclination about being in agriculture. And what we find is that when we talk to them about climate, the environment, water scarcity, water purity, biotechnology, they get excited. They get thrilled. These are the lead issues facing our planet. And they say, here's how I can be involved in changing the world. And it gets them hooked and interested. And they're on the road there. I see that we stay in touch with them now, and you can see the impact of what's happening. So I hope you will help us go back to your university, to your institute, say, why aren't we involved in this? Why isn't this happening on that? Because, as I said, we face this greatest challenge in human history. How will we feed 9 billion people? But beyond that, we have this issue of, is the world going to be able to be peaceful, to be stable? So I want to share with you one other story. I told you about all the buildings, told you about the statues, told you about the interests. I'm so glad Representative Cuba is here. You know, here's the newest way that we can do this, that we can work together. And that I invite you to come to the World Food Prize in October. Send representatives from Cuba, nominate someone for our prize. You know, Pedro Sanchez, of course, was born in Cuba, so I'm always pleased saying we got a laureate from Cuba, but it's agriculture that opens the way. Just think, so 1959, what I consider the most dangerous moment in human history, when the United States and the Soviet Union were poised to fire nuclear weapons at each other. One of the key moments was when Khrushchev, having come to the UN, travels to Iowa, and he goes to the Roswell Garst farm, and he's out there at the corn crib with Garst, and they're looking, holding up the ears of corn, and he's saying, why can't I have corn like this in the Soviet Union? And it leads to several decades of exchanges. So nothing about growing corn helps diffuse or nuclear weapons, but it's enormous about creating the relationship. It's the way of building some measure of understanding, some sense that you can do things together. That's the important role for agriculture. So I showed you the statue before in the U.S. Capitol. If you go to Washington, you have to go to Statuary Hall and see Borlaug's statue next to Rosa Parks. All these other guys, and mostly men, right, in frock coats there. And here's Norm in his work clothes and his notebook. Got his University of Minnesota ring on his finger I put on for Ron and everybody here because he loved the university. It's hard for an Iowa guy to do that, but I love Norm. So 2 months later, I get an email from somebody interested in, can they buy a copy of the statue? They want to put it up on their campus because they admire Norman Borlaug so much. And the email came from the Agricultural Biotechnology Research Institute of Iran. Because in 2000, they gave a gold medal to Norman Borlaug. And who knew? Their enormous particularly interested in biotechnology. And they invited me to come to Iran and speak at the ceremony they were holding to honor Norm. So I had to convince my wife that it'd be a good idea that we should travel to Tehran. But we did it. I showed up. I'm in Karaj on the campus there, in a room with, I don't know how many people are here, but 400 Iranian research scientists. Down here is the Minister of Agriculture. You know, over here is the mullah representing the Grand Ayatollah. What is this American? This is the only former ambassador, only former senior U.S. government official ever invited to address an Iranian conference. And I told him about Norman Borlaug. And I showed him paintings of Khrushchev in Iowa. And I told him about being with Borlaug at the 100th anniversary of the Nobel Peace Prize. And about how one of the laureates was Elie Wiesel, who said, people who can stand together, cheer together for the same thing, can live in peace together. And I said, I want to tell you a secret about Norman Borlaug. His most ardent wish, his vision, was that one day, using biotechnology, some scientist will take the trait that's in rice that keeps it from ever getting rust disease and put it into wheat and barley and forever eradicate that scourge from the face of the earth. And I said, you Iranians, you're working in biotechnology. Americans are working in biotechnology. We're going to be meeting on this at the World Food Prize. I invite you, send your best scientists, send your top scientists to Des Moines. And they did. I got the visa for him in 2 months, which is itself a miracle. And he's there. So here, whatever you think about the Iran nuclear deal that Secretary Kerry's worked out, is that stopping, preventing the use of nuclear weapons is so critical. Building understanding, transforming those countrysides throughout the Middle East to undercut the ISIS and ISIL and all of the would-be terrorists. It's a long battle. But what you do, what agriculture does, is so critically important to them. Because as I said to them there, I said, just imagine together we do that for Dr. Borlaug. And we can come together, Iranians, American scientists, and we can stand together and cheer together for the same thing, leaving unsaid, but understood, and live in peace together. You're the forward edge of building peaceful relationships, just like Danny Hillel is doing. It's possible. It's so important. And if it's going to be done, we need that next generation to do it. And when I finished and stepped back from the microphone, not knowing what to expect, would I be arrested or thrown out of the country? The minister and the mullah, and they all jumped to their feet and gave me a standing ovation. Not for me, for Norman Borlaug, for the person we have in common, the person whose statue they want to erect in Iran. So I think if Norm had a message for you today, I think he'd be telling you that you should nominate somebody for the prize he created. He'd hope you could come and be at the World Food Prize so the ideas can be exchanged there, so we can build those relationships. He'd say, spread the word about this youth program. These kids, these youth are so important. And he'd say to you, as I say to you, that together we can find synergy in science and partner for solutions. So thank you for having me here today and for being part of this. It's a great honor to be here.
choked up myself. Anyway, do you see why we have here Ambassador Quinn talking about partnering for solutions, huh? And you see why I was excited to introduce him to you. Anyway, on behalf of the American Society of Agronomists, Ambassador Quinn, it gave me a great pleasure to present this small token of our appreciation to you for your inspiring remarks this morning.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. One final announcement. Data plenary starts at 9:30 over in the auditorium of the conference center. That concludes our program. I thank you for your attendance here in Minneapolis and, of course, for this session. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.